Welcome to the Real Estate Rundown. Is NAR purposefully hiding their membership numbers? Let's talk about it. So here's what happened, guys. So every month I do an analysis of realtor count throughout the U.S. Mm-hmm. So Sunday night I was on my computer. I went to realtor.org. I searched for membership reports. It's gone. They're all gone. They had the membership reports published all the way back into the 70s, and all of them have been deleted from the site. So I got on chat. Chat wasn't open. It's 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. on a Sunday night. So I emailed NAR and I asked them what happened to the monthly membership reports. I got a reply back which said that they have removed them from the website, and if I'd like to know the realtor count for my local association, I can contact WeServe.
So you can only know it for your local association, not even the national count.
Yes.
So their numbers are plummeting, and they don't want it to be on front page news. So they're making it hard for people to, for all of us to see how bad the numbers are plummeting. Is that what's going on?
Well, maybe they think the apocalypse is coming. Yeah.
The realtor apocalypse.
Yeah, because think about it. Like in 08, remember, I did that on a coaching call, I don't know, a couple of years ago, where I was looking at transactions and volume per the agents, et cetera, and like, should you be worried, not worried, right? Like when it comes to like volume and production per the agent, et cetera, when they left. Well, they kept those numbers published during that, and those were pretty rough times, right? Like, I mean,
not like this.
But I'm just, memory serves me, it was like we were like 1.25, 1.3, and it went all the way down to like high eights. Like it was massively obliterated.
It was. Yeah. And so I called NAR yesterday and I spoke with one of their reps, and the rep explained to me that yes, the reports have been removed from the site. She said she's been getting a lot of phone calls about it. And I said, can I talk to somebody in leadership? This looks terrible. I said, the read between the lines for me is that realtor count is plummeting and you guys don't want any of us to know. And she put me on hold for about 15 minutes.
Oh, boy.
Came back. Like, check it out.
She hasn't hung up yet.
Yeah. She came back, and I was on my AirPods. I had my AirPods in. And she came back, and she was like, hello? And I'm like, yes, hello? She acted like she couldn't hear me and then hung up.
Oh,
wow.
And so, of course, like, this is like a little passion project. I got tons of shit to do, so I didn't call back. But can you believe it?
That's super crazy.
It must be bad, guys.
Yeah, this is an association that we pay for.
Yeah.
We're a part of.
Yeah.
And that's the customer service.
Right. I'm like, this is
membership service, excuse me.
This is the last thing that we need is more controversy surrounding them and us. And yeah, so I'm just waiting for Housing Wire or Inman to pick it up and report on it because it is sus.
Well, and let's go back to one of the things you said before, like the chat, how it's not alive, how it wasn't live. You're telling me that
it was 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock on a Sunday.
Doesn't matter. Like, why do they not have some type of robo chat?
Oh well,
you know, I'm probably why, because it's honest.
Well, it's definitely I'm shocked. I really am. I'm so surprised.
Mm. It must be really bad then.
You know, it has to be.
If they're like, oh shit, we better, let's hide these. Like, this isn't good.
I mean, talk about throwing you into a dark room without a shred of light. I mean, just like when you're looking at things from the macro.
So now, for you to get a whole macro of the whole United States, you have to like.
You'd have to compile like crazy. Yeah,
which call would be, all 500 associations.
Yeah, that's not.
I mean, do you guys think, though, that agents are already leaving that quick?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Interesting. Mm. It's just, there really hasn't been much buzz around it. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
They're joining more.
I'd be shocked if
people
it's.
People leaving the industry.
I definitely think, like, the people that are. I was, and Kayla, maybe you would know this too, but I forget where I saw this, and it's been quite some time ago, but it was something like along the lines of an agent that does less than 10 deals a year, roughly 60%, or no, it's higher than that, excuse me. I think it was like roughly 70% of what they do is buy-side transactions.
You know, I remember we chopped up that stat before, but I can't recall exactly what it was. You know, here's something, though, that I've been kind of marinating on. So in Arizona, if I were to go get my cosmetology license, I would need to invest 1,600 hours in order to be able to cut, color, perm, hair.
And wax my eyebrows.
Exactly. Yeah. Right?
Like, whoops, your eyebrows gone.
1,600 hours. That is an insane amount of time. I can go get my real estate license in 90 hours. I think the true problem is the low barrier of entry. And then I was podcasting with Glenda Baker yesterday, and we were chopping this up. And she said not only the low barrier of entry, but the low barrier to maintain a license, right? We should put some sort of licensing requirements for a transaction count. Maybe when you first get your license, you're under a mentor for 12, 24 transactions. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have to do a certain amount of transactions every year to stay licensed. Like, it's just such an easy barrier of entry to be a real estate agent. And I think that that is what causes a lot of the issues.
Yeah, and it's all about money, too, because you know, all these associations, they want your money, you know? Like, hey, you might do one deal, you might do zero, but I want your money. I want your association money.
It's a total body count situation for them because it's roughly a thousand, depending on where you're at, et cetera, it's $1,000 to $1,500-ish, right, per year.
So what would you guys think if it costs, like, five times as much, but you had less competition?
Oh,
I wouldn't mind.
If it costs $10,000 a year,
yeah.
If it costs $10,000 a year to keep up your license, but yet then at that point you would have, you know, not everyone and their mom would have their license.
But that would stop the people that get licensed. So
you get more business.
Yeah, that would stop the people that get licensed to sell their house or to sell their mom's house or their friend's house, right? How many people do that? Like, oh, I'm not doing anything right now.
Oh, go get my license, and I'll help you next month to buy your house. Yep. Buy your house, yeah. Yeah, and then they make $20,000, and they're like, oh, cool.
That was so easy.
Very easy.
Yeah, I mean, you see it happen all the time. They do that and get their license to do that one deal. That's it.
Well, and I mean, unfortunately, the service, like, no shade on them, but shade on them because think about the service that they provide. Think about the fiduciary, the foresight, right? Like, it's all good if it's a, you know, smooth as butter transaction, but what if there's an inspection problem? What if there's a, you know, title problem, right? Something that requires true expertise in the industry and they're unable to fulfill that, and that person then walks down that slippery slope with somebody that has technically only 90 hours more of education, which, let's face it, that's not transactional experience.
Mm-hmm. And what we learn in real estate school, you can pretty much brain dump once you take the test.
Yep.
Because a lot of it is, you know, there's some stuff that's valuable, but there's a lot of information that's taught that we just don't use. And if you ever did need to know it, you would go get that resource.
Or it's so specific, like sections around meets and bounds. Yeah, we really need that in Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, so interesting. Hey, here was a question I was asked recently, and I liked it, and so I want to ask you guys and get each of your answers. So if you could go back, we'll start with Elliot. Elliot, if you could go back to day one of your real estate journey,
okay,
and do something differently, tell yourself something differently to be successful, what would it be?
Follow up.
That was like quick and simple. Like,
well, because it was the hardest lesson I learned. Probably about 10 years. I had a lot of success over my, especially my first 10 years of creating new clients, et cetera. Terrible at a solid client success follow-up process, right? Like, and I mean, we didn't have as much technology. CRMs weren't as prevalent, et cetera. It was a different process then. But without a doubt, I have, being completely candid, I promise I've lost probably well over $1 million because of crappy follow-up.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Keith?
Mine's pretty similar. It's basically staying in communication with anybody that you've done business with. Mm-hmm. I'm super guilty.
That's what I'm talking about, the follow-up.
Yeah, I'm still guilty of it even today in some avenues where, right, you got me in the moment. I'm all in. I give you a great experience. But then once that transaction's done, there's no like tight communication. I mean, I have created some pretty tight relationships.
Yeah, aren't you in someone's will or?
Well, I don't even know. Like, I haven't even heard from that guy in like over a year. And like, some investigator was calling and asking about him. And I never called him back.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Okay.
Wait. Are you just that's all you're gonna say on this?
Yeah, yeah. Wait, we're like,
what are you talking about, investigator?
A little bit more.
Please talk about. We didn't leave his name out.
I don't know what it was about. This is the guy who was basically getting catfished.
Oh, by
Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I don't know if like, who knows? It was bizarre. But anyway, yeah. So I have created some pretty tight relationships, but there's no question if I would have had that system in place, I guarantee you,
absolutely
more consistent business versus always hunting for new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Jay?
For me, it would be, think about buying the property before selling it. So like there's, I remember running into so many sellers and it's like they had to leave or they had to go and they're like, oh, we'll list it on the market. We'll sell it. Instead of thinking like, well, I'll buy it from you, Yep. I wish I would have done more of that. Like, we'll buy it. We'll buy it. We'll get you out of here and go. And
that's a solid one.
Put it as a rental or resell it and flip it. And what we're doing now, obviously. But yeah, I think that's probably what I would do differently.
Yeah.
And you?
Well, I think my take on it was I could go back and tell myself, and this is what we did, but it was with a lot of emotional turmoil. It was really emotionally taxing. I remember when we were first in real estate because, the first like 6-8 months were really super lean. We were out of money. We had just both applied for jobs at an airline as reservation clerks.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
they didn't know that either.
They didn't hire us. Neither of us got a job, but we were like broke as a joke. Credit cards were nearly maxed out. It was just really stressful. And if I could go back in time, I would just tell myself to prospect like your life depended on it. 6-8 hours a day, just prospect every single day like crazy and don't expect nothing for 9 to 12 months. And then within 12 to 18 months, you'll be the number one producer in your market. And kind of like what happened, but I think the advice I would give myself would be more of that like mental clarity to have the mindset like this is going to work. Because there was a lot of doubt. Like I had a ton of doubt when we started. And I think maybe because we were so young and then being broke doesn't help.
No, it's scary.
Yeah, it was really scary. So I would just go back and give myself that reassurance that everything you're doing is going to pay off epically and you don't need to stress about the results. Just, that whole trust the process thing.
Yeah.
No, I love that. That's, for me, that's Darren Hardy 101 right there.
Yep. I love him.
Go. He says something similar, like, go out and get as many no's as possible because the more no's you get, comes with more yeses.
Yeah. I used to have a little thing that says every no is closer to a yes in front of me.
Yeah.
I get on the phone, like, all right, I can get a no.
And that's what he said he did. He just went and prospected like insane and then started becoming one of the top producers in early 20s. So
yeah, I love it.
It works.
This is a good question. You know why? Because like I could sit here and see all of us, right? Like, I mean, obviously we've all been in the game a long time now, but to see how we've learned from what we just said and actually put it into action like today.
Yeah. Right. Like when we started Zoodelio, we had no expectation of immediate success whatsoever. We knew it was going to be a grind. We were all here for it, and it was that mindset that we needed in order to build something cool that most people don't have. Yeah. They expect results like immediately, like, hey, results aren't going to be served up Amazon Prime.
No.
Not today.
When they have no staying power.
Yeah.
Right? Like they bounce. Right. Like,
yep.
It's like buying a stock or something, it dips, and all of a sudden you're like, I'm out. Sometimes you got to stay and weather the storm.
Yeah. Topic. So you guys want to talk about $1 million homes?
Yep. Let's talk about $1 million homes.
Well, let's talk about it. So in 2020, we know that there was a lot of money that flooded into the market.
Yes. We got Jerome Powell, like he was printing that. You got that.
Yeah.
See that dude, that meme
let's
where
expand
we're just
the
doing
dollar.
This and the money is just flying out.
Fiat money.
It's printing it.
Let's pour it in.
Yes. So now $1 million homes are now typical in a record number of U.S. cities, the analysis finds. According to Zillow, they came out with an analysis that said that in February, there were $550 million cities where the typical home value is $1 million months or more, which is just insane. And they have this graph. I'll have Colby put it up on screen because it's crazy. It shows the number of million-dollar cities in the U.S., and it hits a new high. You can literally see in 2020, and you can see this insane
that's
jump.
That's
in
2020, there was 250 cities, and so it doubled.
Yeah.
It doubled to 550 cities, or more than doubled.
In 4 years.
And so that's basically just inflation. That's,
I know, that doesn't prove how printing stupid inflation is. I don't know what does.
It was basically a tax. They taxed us. They printed all the money, and now we have million-dollar homes, but who cares? Like, are we going to sell it and go buy another million-dollar home?
I was about
to say, the same thing.
Yeah. No, normally a chart like that is great, but not for homes.
No.
I was like, that's a nice big green candle right there.
I know.
Maybe she could sell it and move to another country.
Some like rural city, but then what are you going to do for work? So unless you have a remote job, okay, that works. But guess what? They've called everybody back to work. So.
Right.
But even some of the rural places, I mean, they're double in price,
too.
Oh,
totally.
So it's no different.
So CPI numbers come out tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
And we know that the Fed target is what, like between 2.2 and 2.4, and there's no way we're going to be close to that. So what does that mean for rate cuts?
Not happening.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be a rate cut this year. Unless the administration really like puts the pressure on it, which a lot of these feds are kind of scared. They're like, there are a lot of them saying like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have rate cuts.
Yeah. Who was it? Was Kashari?
Kashari. Yeah.
Yeah. He came out last week and said that, maybe we're not going to have cuts this year.
Or will it be 60 days before election that they go do something with the bond market and do something to try to put pressure and make people feel good that last 60 days before they go to the freaking voting booth?
Well, they're doing that by saying that what Biden came out with a new student loan thing again.
Oh my
goodness. Like another one. Like, oh, we're gonna raise
your
student debt. Yeah, like vote for me, I'll raise your student debt, which he can't. So it's like it's just a bunch of lies.
Yeah, it's propaganda.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is the spread between the 10-year Treasury and mortgage interest rates is closing.
Narrowing.
Right. Yeah. So that spread at one point was like over 300 basis points. And so
that is crazy.
It is compressing, which is good because that means that rates aren't going up at least. But will we get relief? Will they go down?
Well, we don't know.
I think that there's a lot of misconception out there, too. Like, there's times that, like, I'll talk to people in, you know, my network that are not in real estate. They'll be like, hey, I hear home prices are going down. I'm like,
what?
In what city?
Yeah, where?
Because where?
Yeah.
Home prices going. Yeah, but if you
fake news.
You got a piece of crap, maybe. But no one wants a piece of crap right now.
No.
I mean, I guess from reason. Definitely see way more properties with price reductions, so maybe that's where they're thinking housing prices.
Yeah, the pie in the sky price.
But most people are unrealistic when they list their house in the first place, which is why they're having to do a price reduction.
Well, we got Kayla. I'm talking about you have a listing. We have a friend that you listed a property at $3 million, and we're getting a lot of showings, like in the $3 million range. You know,
right.
Like
that is crazy.
So you got the people with the money; they're out there still shopping.
Well, they're not as impacted by all of these changes. Yeah. And, you know, with what happened, they're probably in better positions than the average.
Yeah, if they own a bunch of assets, which most Americans don't have assets, that's what really skyrocketed and appreciated was assets.
Assets, yeah.
Not your, you know, of course, eggs and milk and all that stuff went up. And that definitely, you know, hits the average American, but...
Not your cash sitting in the bank doing nothing.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't own assets, you're just poorer and poorer and poorer every year.
Your money's being stolen from you.
Especially from 2020 to 2024, if you don't own assets.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You were hurting for certain.
This was definitely really shocking. I mean, I've seen the memes where it's like, I've always wanted $1 million house. I didn't know that my house would be it, you know? Right? Because before we used to think, it's a $1 million home. It was
totally.
Like this is going to be a showstopper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a whole show.
Show, yeah.
$1 million listing. Now it's just like average.
Now
like,
it's just a decent track home.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really all it is.
It's crazy.
At least in the Phoenix Metro.
It's crazy.
Some out in like California. It's a dump.
Yeah.
You know?
I'd say, well, California's been obnoxious for a decade.
Yeah.
Okay, let's think here. If we were building a home and you wanted to put a really cool feature in it, what are some cool features that you would want in your home?
Oh boy.
I want a Zoom room.
I tell you, a nice big like RV storage garage.
Oh yeah, there you go.
For your cars.
But yeah, well, not for an RV, but I mean,
yeah.
Just for storage.
I could see that. I could see you with that, Keith.
Okay.
Yeah. Totally.
I need one. All my Halloween stuff.
Let's go. I know a good realtor.
That's funny.
Elliot, what about you? Craft room?
Possibly a craft room. That's so funny.
A wrapping paper room.
That's definitely not me.
It's Carly.
That is Carly. All perfect. I'd probably do something. I mean, if we're going to get like crazy, I'd do something fun. Like, I don't know, some type of like golf simulator or something like that. That'd be fun.
Hmm. Golf simulator. Yeah,
that's really I'm surprised cool. You didn't say flight simulator.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Okay. Steam oven.
Ooh.
For sure.
Yep.
That I hear is amazing. What about you, Jay?
Oh man. A bowling alley.
That'd be cool.
That'd be fun. Cause I don't like putting my fingers in like other people's bowling balls and stuff. Actually, that wasn't me. That was Kayla saying that.
My jaw just dropped because the other day we were looking at this house in Queen Creek, and was it listed for $25 million or
$25 million?
$25 million in Queen Creek. So we're looking at this house and has a bowling alley, and I'm like, that would be pretty cool. And he's like, why? And I'm like, well, I like to bowl. I just don't like sticking my fingers in holes where other people stick their fingers.
I think they sanitize those things pretty good. But
do they?
I don't know. It depends on the bowl.
The 16-year-old employee doing it? Yeah, they're sanitizing.
They just spray it with alcohol like crazy, kills everything.
Oh, that's too funny.
I don't know. That does make you think, though, right? Like, I mean, I even like just even like having one of the things I have now, which is awesome, is like a little sonic ice machine in the house. Yeah. Like just little things like that. And I totally dig it.
Oh, yeah. We've had ice machines like one of the last 10 years and
longer for like almost 20 years, 20 years we've had an ice machine.
So that's and it's an expensive thing too.
It is not cheap. Yeah.
And like, you're like, oh man, I'm gonna spend $2,000 on this machine. And then it breaks like every 7 years. So we've gone through like maybe four or five.
Brace
of them.
Yourself,
I think
Elliot.
It's cause of the heat, right? Like I already had one go out under warranty, and I actually went to the Scotsman, the better one.
Oh, did you? Scotsman.
<Yeah. laughs> I know, in Arizona, you gotta have ice. You gotta have ice.
Ice is a luxury.
I think also a sauna or like a...
Yeah, that'd be good.
Like steam room.
Yeah, that would be good.
A cold plunge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh. Like a spa room or something, you know? Has it all
enclosed.
There. Yeah.
Be cool. That'd be cool.
Colby's saying, yeah, he wants to do a dunk, don't you?
See, those are the things I think of when I think of $1 million home.
Yeah.
Not like a 2,500 square foot with a three-car garage.
Yeah, like I was on a bike ride with Carly on Sunday, and right across the street, I mean, we do live in a nice area, but there's some, you know, custom homes around right across the street from us that are on like larger property, and the house is so-so. And we saw it was for sale and pulled it up, and it was 2.5, and I was like, no way, no how would I even consider paying 2.5 for this house.
Well, because it was 1.25 last or in 2020. I know. But they printed all that money, and now it's 2.5.
Yeah. I mean, and giving a perspective is like, I think it was 5.5, 3,200 square feet on like 3/4 acre.
Is it a brand new home?
No.
Oh, okay.
Two-story? Single level.
Single level.
Hmm. Yeah, so that's going to give it a little bit of value. Some of these houses are like dumpy too. They got all the old...
Absolutely would have needed some updating.
The Tuscan look all that travertine and busting all that stuff out. Oh, man, it's a mess.
And it's good that like on a house like that, you're going to spend at least $100K in a remodel to get it up to date.
They put like wood paneling all over the whole house. It's like just all wood.
I mean, at one point in time, that was like the dream, you know? Like live, so laugh, fancy. Love. That was now the era.
Yeah, it did. 3 to 2009, somewhere.
Yeah. I feel like it went to 2015.
2015. Oh, no, not that long.
You think so?
No.
Okay, I'm out of touch.
No, yeah, things went pretty modern after 2010, you know, especially I saw the new builders.
Well, now it's all like mid-century, the farmhouse modern.
Yeah, yes. I think modern farmhouse is trending out.
I do. That doesn't say how long is
it
that?
Is. It definitely is.
Going back to Tuscan?
No.
I feel like it's actually going very modern.
I think it's, yeah, more of like with natural elements and.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely modern is trendy.
Like wallpaper?
Yeah, wallpaper's back. It's making a splash. It's cool.
Always going to be something. I mean, heck, bell bottoms came back, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, D.R. Horton, they're doing popcorn ceilings again.
For real?
No.
Oh. I was literally going to fall out of my chair if that was the case.
I was like, whoa.
Save $7,500 and your just popcorn go ceilings. Popcorn on your ceiling.
What?
Why do they do that? Is it that much cheaper to just...
I just think it was just, the style.
They
I
mean, just
it was
spray like, on it and all yeah. like that and then just sticks. Stuck to it. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It was easy.
Yeah. I think it was easy. All right, well, what do we got? We got market. What do we got from market update?
So the market mini, Colby sent me some stuff. What was it, Blackstone or Black Rock? Which one was it? Blackstone. Blackstone bought Air, which was a big apartment REIT. So they own a bunch of apartments, and they spent $10 billion on it. So people are saying, well, that's a good sign when you have someone like Blackstone buying a massive you know, apartment, multifamily REIT. So, I mean, do they know something more than we know? So that hey, assets are still going to still be going up. Inflation's still going. So we're going to buy as much as possible. So, because those prices are going to keep rocketing.
Mm-hmm.
So
they have a little
watch what the big boys are doing and you do that.
Mm-hmm. They have access to a little bit more data than we do. And trend reports.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they can set a trend.
Yeah.
They got enough money.
They create the trend. Yeah, we're going to buy it all and then raise the prices. Right.
You got a deal of the week?
Yeah. So I was actually just thinking about it. I'll go to the past a little bit. So there is a property purchased in Portland, Oregon, several months ago. And I mean, this property was in such bad shape. Like, it was shocking that someone was even living in this place.
Someone living in that?
Yeah, but it was tenant occupied. So the sellers, you know, a divorce situation.
Let's give Colby a couple pictures.
Yeah, that's the main reason they were selling. But so even though this place is only 700 and some square foot, we literally redid everything, though. I mean, I'm like all the panels from on the exterior was completely ripped off. New insulation. I mean, it was pretty much built from besides the foundation, right?
Yeah,
it's completely redone. Yeah.
Left the studs.
And so it's really cool because it's like, oh man, that's a big project. But now what it turned into, and then getting it back under contract on the resale. It's just, it's really cool to, you know, go through that whole process and the whole experience because, one, it's a massive win for the previous sellers because, obviously, it fetched as much money as possible.
Yeah, they're going to make a bunch more money.
Exactly, versus if they would have just maybe not come across our cash plus. Obviously, the agent presented it to them. They probably would just took an investor offer, got a little bit of cash, and moved on. And then it's really cool to transform a property and, one, increase the value of the area, and then, you know, now someone gets to live in virtually a brand new home.
That's so cool.
I remember it was a divorce situation, right?
Yep.
And they, you know, they were going to sell to an investor, like, super cheap. Like, they're going to dump it. I mean, it was a dump.
Yeah, it was a dump.
It was literally like
the like, term of dump.
The next person was not going to move into that. I think they was a rental. Right.
Yeah.
And they just tore it up, and it was just nasty. And now they're gonna make. Now they made we made them a ton of money.
Yes.
Yeah, right? They made a lot more money too. Yeah. So thank you to the agent that's a Zudelia member that brought this cool product to them. That's cool.
And congrats to the homeowners.
Yeah.
Yes.
A good story. I love it, Keith.
Yep. All right. Well, what I got in advice is I'm gonna actually stay on trend a little bit based on what we were talking about here today, with the potential of agents leaving the business Well, guess what that does? That's going to open up the landscape for you to go out and absorb some of those clients. So taking that advice of getting really on purpose of prospecting. Now, to be clear, prospecting can look so many ways. It absolutely can be you picking up the phone. It can be you sending out messages, which is a little bit more marketing-based, to try to draw them in. But it's really about being proactive about expanding your message. And then the biggest thing I want to hit on that is when you do a great job of that, get the people inside of your ecosystem, give them something of value, and set a system and a process in place so that you have that long-term nurture sequence. So you're not like myself and look back 10 years down the road and be like, dang, I just stepped over $1 million because I chose not to do this. Don't make that mistake.
Yeah, I was giving them something of value, like the cash plus, like the agent that gave the divorcees that, hey, you guys should do this. They'll remodel your house and put a bunch of value into it, and you'll make a bunch of money. Flip your own house, and you don't have to do crap, but pay a 6% service fee, and that's it.
That's right.
There's some value.
That's free cash, right? I mean, at the end of the day, process. I mean, in all technicality, it is free because you pay for the service, but you're making additional cash. Yep. And you're not swinging the hammer. You're not pulling money out of your pocket. Pretty cool stuff. What do we got? Viral vibes. Want to take us home?
Yes, I will end today with the viral vibes, and that is affordability. Redfin published a report that said half of U.S. homeowners and renters struggle to make their monthly housing payment. And what is really sad is 22% of respondents said that they skipped meals in order to be able to afford their housing. So we know it's an issue, definitely sad. And it is definitely going viral because people are feeling the pain of not being able to afford their monthly housing payments.
Jeez.
And now McDonald's in California, you get a Big Mac meal is like $25 now, right? With the raisin,
it is not, is it?
So it's more expensive going to. In that area than
well, no, they
McDonald's?
Just they raised the minimum wage for all fast food workers to $20 an hour. So now all the prices are going up.
I saw something with McDonald's. I forget what it is, but it's something like it had gone up by like 250% within like a 5-year span. Like the average cost of a menu item on McDonald's.
Yep.
I can tell you right now. So those of you that don't know, I have a blended family and we have 7 kids. And so when I go through McDonald's sometimes, if you're on the road traveling.
It's a hundy. You may have a hundy in your
pocket.
It's
like $75 for like breakfast for everybody. It's like pretty crazy. And I'm talking, we're just getting like little sausage biscuits, not like everybody getting like lavish stuff. $75.
No, you can't have the hotcake plate. That's too expensive.
Exactly.
No hotcakes for you.
That's crazy.
All right. Hey, thanks for tuning in. If you're getting value from our episodes, please make sure to like, comment, subscribe, and hit that notification bell so you're updated of our new episodes.